This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Heart Greens. Helping to support healthy blood pressure and circulation just became hassle-free. Introducing Heart Greens, the functional food that you drink using the same dark leafy greens recommended by both the DASH and Mediterranean diets. Get a free canister of Heart Greens with your first order and a 100% money-back guarantee. Heart Greens even guarantees you'll love the taste. Call 800-951-8940. That's 800-951-8940. Or visit IntelligentGreens.com. That's IntelligentGreens.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today I'm going to talk to one of my favorite guests about one of the most important subjects that we tackle here on Intelligent Medicine. The subject is anxiety, the flip side of which is depression, mood problems. He's an authoritative source on this because he's written several books on the subjects. His books include Healing Depression, Integrated Naturopathic and Conventional Treatments, and his new book, actually, a book a couple of years ago is How Come They're Happy and I'm Not. He is Dr. Peter Bongiorno. And Dr. Bongiorno has an interesting background because he comes originally with a background in neuroscience. He was a researcher at Bethesda, Maryland, the National Institutes of Health, in that field before he undertook a course of study in naturopathic medicine, which he completed at Bastyr University, and subsequently has become a very prominent member of the naturopathic community. He practices here in New York, a very successful practice. He's also a licensed acupuncturist. And let's get the full roster of his books. One is Put Anxiety Behind You. Another, as I mentioned, was How Come They're Happy and I'm Not. And as I mentioned, Holistic Solutions for Anxiety and Depression. So without further ado, here's Dr. Bongiorno. Peter, it's a pleasure having you back on Intelligent Medicine.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Hoffman. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for your show and all you do to support good information.
Well, that's what we're going to try and do. And, of course, this is the kickoff of the anxiety season because for a lot of people, the holidays are hectic. We've got Thanksgiving. We've got Black Friday. And then it seems to be a relentless march towards Super Bowl with all kinds of stressful events, lots of bad eating, you know, alcohol, you name it.
Yeah, and I have to say the election and everything leading up to the election, I think I've seen so many patients that were so profoundly affected by the all the debates and everything leading up to the election and the election. And so I think it started earlier this year.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think it's great to be political and to be very committed. But I think when it takes a toll on you physically, I think, you know, we have to come up with some coping strategies. It's not that we should all become apolitical or zombies about what's happening in our country. But, you know, maybe just, you know, create a little space between external events and our own inner sanctum.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I think, you know, no matter what political views a person has, I think it's safe to say that everyone has been really strongly affected and really, you know, it's really taken a toll on our adrenal systems and our stress systems.
Right. I think that that just the very week of the election, you know, was staying up all night and then the aftermath. And I think a lot of people, some people were elated, but a lot of people were shocked and disappointed. And so, you know, it harkens back to a study that was done, and I'm sure you're aware of it, where they measured the testosterone of fans of different sides of Super Bowl contestants. And what they discovered is that, you know, when your team wins, your testosterone goes up. And when your team loses, you kind of get deflated and your testosterone plummets. So they're really physical effects. You know, it's the biology of defeat. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
So there's a lot happening, you know, and you can explain some of the mechanisms by which stress affects us. So, you know, and I must say, and I'm sure you can echo the sentiment, is that among the patients we see, and I would hasten to say that you have a sort of a general practice of natural medicine, of integrative medicine. So you see all kinds of patients. But I have to say that an underlying theme with virtually all my patients, you know, perhaps with rare exceptions, is some element of anxiety, particularly since we practice here in hustling, bustling New York.
Absolutely. In fact, that's how I think I started this road of working on mental health literature, you know, and these different books is because I remember when I started my practice in 2003, I would say at least half to three quarters of the patients I saw were on some kind of anti-anxiety or antidepressant medication, even if they came in for other things. Mm-hmm. That was always part of the background noise, in a sense of their medical history.
Yeah, indeed. And so perhaps there's a better solution, or, you know, even given the fact that some people take these medications, they're still subject to stress. They only work partially for many, not at all for some. They create a lot of side effects. So what's going on when we experience anxiety?
Well, I mean, certainly anxiety is very different for everyone. The way I think about it is anxiety is the situation where the body just feels there's too much input coming in, and it gets to the point where it feels like it can't handle it anymore, and you get this sense of overwhelm, you know, because there's a very big difference between fear and anxiety. So fear is a normal response that we have as animals. Basically, we have this fear response that comes with our primitive brain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's say, the saber-toothed tiger is, you're walking through the forest and that tiger comes up to you. Of course, you're going to have a fear response, and your brain is going to put in motion this idea of shunting all your energy towards running or fighting. And it sets up a situation where your adrenal glands put out all these stress hormones, and you run or you fight, and hopefully you get away from the danger and you live another day. And that's the fear response. And that's very, very healthy. And we're all derived from people who hopefully had a good enough fear response. Yep. So that they were able to reproduce, right?
I sometimes say, Peter, that we're almost all of us who are alive in this world are naturally selected to be fearful, because if we weren't,
right,
we wouldn't be here.
That's right.
Our ancestors who were, cool, calm, and collected in the face of danger, they were the ones who were rendered extinct by circumstances.
Yeah, they got eaten by the saber-toothed tiger.
Right. So, they got chopped up in, raids by Vikings or whatever.
So there's many of us who, unfortunately, don't just have an appropriate fear response when there's a danger, but we have anxiety. And anxiety is really creating a fear response in a time when you really don't need it, or that you're worried about something that might happen in the future that requires a fear response. But you're thinking about it so much that it's creating this fear response in the present, really when there isn't a need for it. And anxiety is really the issue, right? Anxiety is now not something that's helping us stay alive and survive, but it's actually something that when it happens and chronically and in the long term, it starts making all these changes in our body, inflammation, changes in blood sugar, changes in lipids in our body, changes in our brain itself, that actually create more sickness, and then the more anxious we are, the more anxious we become, and to the point where it does become this overwhelm, and then we can't function properly.
So this is not purely a psychological issue, because, I mean, clearly people can do some talk therapy and kind of realign their beliefs, maybe do some cognitive behavioral therapy to put their concerns in context and do some self-talk. But there's actually some physical basis, almost like people are hooked on the physiology of anxiety. Does that happen to some of your patients?
Yeah, absolutely. And not that because they want to be hooked on it, but because it's just the kind of thing where our body gets into this pattern that sometimes it can be very hard to get out. And the thoughts can help drive why we got there, but also our physiology itself. And this is something I talk about extensively in my books, this idea that, what's going on in your body will affect your brain as much as what's going on in your brain affects your body. And I know we think about it more as a brain issue. It's interesting, in Chinese medicine, you know, the Chinese knew about the brain, you know, for thousands and thousands of years, but they never ascribed it a meridian like they did all the other organs. And one of the reasons why they didn't is because they didn't really see the brain as an organ that did anything of its own, but really was just a relay center and was affected by the rest of the body. So if you notice in Chinese medicine, there's no brain meridian.
Yeah, right. There's a liver, spleen, from what I can remember, a kidney, etc.
Right. Right, pretty much all the other organs have meridians, but not the brain, because they didn't really see it as a generator of what was going on, but almost as something that reacted to what the rest of was going on with the rest of the body. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, and I think modern psychiatry could really learn a lot from that concept and realize that, hey, you know, everything that goes on in the brain isn't just brain oriented, because what we do is we try to throw drugs at it to change neurotransmitters in the brain. But most of those neurotransmitters are actually made in other places, like in our digestive tract, mm-hmm. and are very affected by what goes on in the rest of the body. So what I maintain in my books is this idea that, you know, we really have to treat the rest of the body if we're going to get the brain healthy, as well as work on the thoughts directly.
Well, we're seeing some remarkable breakthroughs in our understanding, for example, of the microbiome, is that by taking probiotics, we can actually sometimes alleviate anxiety to some extent, because the bacteria that inhabit our gastrointestinal tract play a role in shaping our moods. And that's just one of the myriad elements that affect our brain function.
Yeah, that's right. There's a French study that they did for over a month. And what they showed is taking lactobacillus and bifidus in a combination of probiotic supplement help people and mice, two different studies, raise levels of GABA, which GABA stands for gamma aminobutyric acid, which is the most calming neurotransmitter in our brain. And it's usually quite low in people who have very strong anxieties. And what they found was people who took them had less anger, less hostility, less anxiety, more balanced mood. Yeah.
Is there such a thing as an anxiety-producing diet? People come in, and how do you tackle that?
Sure. Well, I think so. I mean, certainly, you know, I don't think necessarily caffeine causes anxiety, but I think if people are prone to anxiety, caffeine could definitely augment those feelings. Even more importantly, I think is just balancing blood sugar. A lot of times, you know, patients I see, you know, they're rushing around during the day and they're not really eating, or if they're eating, they're eating some carby stuff, and their blood sugar just kind of drops. Very often, and I think those low blood sugars are very contributory towards anxiety. That, you know, that primitive brain, when the blood sugar gets low, it gets very stressed out. You know, it feels we're going to starve here. And sometimes people don't realize they're hungry, but they just have very anxious feelings. And I can't tell you how many patients I've seen. You just ask them to eat a good protein breakfast in the morning and eat small, frequent meals throughout the day. And that alone can contribute to anxiety improving.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's now new information about how mood, and in particular depression, but the flip side of depression, of course, is anxiety, is part of brain inflammation, and that an inflammatory diet may worsen that. An anti-inflammatory diet may help that. We can talk about brain nutrients that counteract brain inflammation.
Yeah, the Mediterranean diet, there's some great studies out of Spain. Sanchez and Villegas did these wonderful studies in like 2007, 2008. And what they showed is that people who ate a really, really good healthy Mediterranean diet, which is, you know, high in good unsaturated fats like olive oil, plenty of fish, not too much meat, plenty of vegetables, they had much lower rates of anxiety and depression. And it also showed that their blood vessels were much, much healthier, and that made molecules that helped keep the brain and the blood vessels working even better. Yeah, so diet can definitely play a strong role. And obviously, when we eat a better diet, that microbiome we were talking about is also much healthier too. And that sends less inflammatory molecules to the brain. And when the brain is less inflamed, we have less anxiety and less depression. And so they all work together.
And then, of course, the studies on things like curcumin and fish oil seem to support that. You know, these anti-inflammatory nutrients can make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, fish oil is beautiful for two reasons. It's definitely anti-inflammatory, and that's been shown. And people who have plenty of fish and fish oils have been shown to have lower rates of anxiety and depression, and are more protected from it. And also, fish oil, from a structural standpoint, is very good for the brain. You know, the brain is made of fat and water. And if we, drink enough water and we take in good fats, like from fish oil, we really do build a better brain.
Mm-hmm. And it seems to have anti-seizure effects. And some neuroscientists theorize that anxiety is akin to an emotional seizure. You know, we tend mm-hmm. to think of seizures, people flapping their arms and, biting their tongue. But a different part of the brain may have instability and may be prone to hyperactivity, where fish oil kind of has a dampening effect on that potentially.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, there's a part of the brain called the amygdala, and that part of the brain is really the area that's responsible for being afraid and creating that fear response. And so my guess is that the fish oil, stabilizes our whole brain and the the way the signals get carried across those nerve cells. So that would make sense.
Indeed. And you practice acupuncture, so I think a lot of people intuitively could see what, acupuncture might be good for a bum knee or for headaches. Mm-hmm. They tend to say, acupuncture is a good treatment for pain, but can acupuncture actually influence mood? Is it designed to do that?
Oh, no question about it. One of my first introductions to acupuncture, I talk about in the book, many years ago when I was in my early 20s, I had pretty terrific anxiety myself, and acupuncture was one of the things that helped me start sleeping better at a time when I really had difficulty with sleep. And what's been shown is acupuncture really calms the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, which is the part of our brain and the parts of our body which kind of run the hormonal and nervous system and allows us to either react more fearfully and with anxiety or to react more calmly. And so it's been shown that acupuncture can really help normalize and calm that system down. And, akin to meditation, it really helps us just center and feel more resilient and just feel calmer. It's really wonderful. If anyone listening hasn't tried it, I strongly recommend it.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's that whole endorphin theory, and that's one of the demonstrable effects of acupuncture. A lot of people say, there's no science to it, but actually measurable levels of endorphins and enkephalins can be generated and measured with acupuncture. So that clearly could have a calmative effect.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I have so many patients who are just amazed by, when they get off the table after an acupuncture treatment, how they just feel better and they feel calmer and they feel actually stronger.
Right. And there's some interesting information on what's called vagal nerve stimulation for treatment of depression. Mm-hmm. Of course, the vagal nerve is that big nerve that's, sometimes I say I haven't the vaguest idea what it does, but what it does everything. It regulates digestion, heartbeat, but it also has an effect on mood. And from what I understand, that acupuncture can plug into the vagus. There are reflex points on the body or on the ear that actually directly influence the vagus to create a relaxation response.
Yep. Yeah, and the other things that create a wonderful vagal response besides acupuncture is meditation, is getting a massage, is walking outside in the woods, so there's many ways to do that before having to put a pulse generator and stimulate our vagus nerve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's what they're thinking is they're going to create some medical device and implant it in your spine or something like that to treat your depression.
Right, no, and it's being done. It's being done, but I certainly recommend trying these less invasive maneuvers first.
Right. Exactly. And a lot of people now are aware of the role that cortisol plays. And when you see patients who complain of symptoms, sleeplessness, worry, panic attacks, one of your tools is to probably measure the cortisol, correct?
Yes, and we generally use both saliva tests and blood tests to look at cortisol. I do like the saliva tests a little more. My understanding is that it checks excuse me, available cortisol, free cortisol versus total cortisol. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing about doing a saliva test is you can take it home and you spit into a tube, because sometimes the act of just getting a needle will raise your cortisol levels. Right. So it's something you can do at home, and usually what I'll have people do is check it throughout the day. Four times a day, you know, morning, noon, afternoon, evening. And then if they're waking during the night, have them do one when they wake up as well. And that'll check their cortisol, and it'll also check another hormone called DHEA, which is also made in the adrenal glands. Mm-hmm. And DHEA is important because when it becomes low, your brain isn't protected from the stress hormone cortisol as much anymore. And that could lead to actually brain atrophy in certain areas, like memory areas and emotional areas called the limbic system.
Hmm. And DHEA, you know, I've noticed that when giving it to patients, it can sort of bolster resilience and perhaps confidence emotionally.
Exactly.
Yeah,
because what it does is, you know, a lot of patients who, when they have experience anxiety, they get this sort of surreal kind of cloudiness that happens. And that's the cortisol, the stress hormone from the adrenal glands, is just bathing the brain. Mm-hmm. And they feel that kind of surreal sort of feeling. DHEA kind of helps meet cortisol at the brain and protects it a bit from that. And so people tend to feel less of that, even if they're having the stress response. So DHEA is definitely important and really helpful.
Great. All right. We've laid the groundwork for a discussion in part two of some practical steps that people can undertake to alleviate depression. So get ready, Peter Bongiorno, because we're going to quiz you about a specific protocol, supplements, things that people can do, news that they can use to alleviate anxiety and depression. Our guest, Dr. Peter Bongiorno, he's got some great books out there on the subject, Put Anxiety Behind You, How Come They're Happy and I'm Not, and Holistic Solutions for Anxiety and Depression. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Stay with us for part two. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.